Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. We appreciate you tuning in. Today's Sunday, July 16th, 2017. My name is Maddie Love, and I'm really happy to be in studio today just to be a fly on the wall as Hertzy and our guest Cameron Duncan discuss Cameron's experiences being homeschooled in a fundamentalist Christian environment. Born and raised well outside of the major cities of Alaska, Cameron recently moved to Minnesota in 2015 to attend the U of M. She recently graduated with her master's in occupational therapy just a couple weeks ago. And if you happen to be looking to hire an occupational therapist as a new grad, she also happens to be currently looking. This is an open conversation. We welcome and encourage listener interaction with your emails to radio@mnatheist.org. Tweets can be directed to @atheisttalk. And while we're live, you can call the studio at 952-946-6205. And now over to Hertzy and Cameron.
Thank you very much, Maddie. Good morning. And good morning, Cameron. How are you doing today?
Good. Good morning.
Good. So, first off, I want to say welcome to the land of snow and ice, coming from the land of snow and ice. So let's start at the beginning of, you're from Alaska, and it sounds like far away from people, Alaska.
Yeah, we lived in a small town called Big Lake, and then we lived about 3 miles even farther out down a dirt road, and so pretty isolated out there, lots of trees, lots of forest.
And we were talking a little bit before, it sounds like you had at least a few siblings to interact with.
I did. I grew up with 5 siblings.
Nice. And what, do you know what the main reason for your parents deciding to homeschool was?
You know, I think it was kind of for a couple different reasons. One of them was because they identified as Christian and they were very religious, and they didn't want us exposed to some of those non-Christian things that we'd be exposed to in a public school. Also, they were very paranoid and very fearful of the outside world, and so I think that contributed to it as well. They kind of wanted to keep us safe and wanted to make sure we stayed home.
You know, and that's actually, so we were discussing backgrounds a little bit, and you know that my background was a little... I grew up in the city, first off, but my parents weren't as fundamental. It was actually funny because my mom, when she was from the middle of nowhere, Minnesota, and they would actually, relatives and stuff would be like, "You're raising your kids in the city?" And I'm like, "It's not that dangerous. I mean, firecrackers? That's about it." But what was a normal day like for you with the homeschooling?
It was very unstructured. So I think that's one of the problems that I have with it. You know, we were allowed to sleep in, just do whatever. We woke up. We did have to say the Pledge of Allegiance before we started school. And then we would do, you know, devotions. And we were just kind of, I mean, there was 5 of us and there was just my mom. So we were kind of just expected to do our own thing. And as you got older, that's where I think a lot of the problems arise. You know, you can't expect a child to want to do school and do that by themselves. But then, you know, just hung out, played with my siblings. We always read. My dad would come home and he would read the Bible some more before bed. That's kind of a typical day.
All right. Now, you said in your emails that there can be multiple dangers when it comes to this kind of homeschooling. One of the big ones being kind of a lack of education. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, it was just my mom, and she just did not have the skills to be teaching, you know, maybe high school age math or anything like that. So I kind of came out of that, and I actually didn't know math very well. I kind of knew the adding and the subtracting, but anything beyond that, I didn't know. I knew how to read, but writing papers, I didn't know. I wasn't very good with pronunciation of words just because I had no one to teach me. And so there's just that, you know, lack of education that we'd get for someone who's more, you know, expert in those subjects if you were to go to a public school.
Did you guys have any access to internet? Because it looks like you're about the same age as I am, and I know I didn't get internet until I was about probably 11 or so. Did you guys ever get access to internet at all?
So I actually originally grew up, we didn't even have electricity or running water for the first part of growing up. So we were pretty far out there. They didn't have the They didn't even have an option for electricity out there at the time. But as I got older, we did get electricity and eventually got internet a little bit later on.
Okay. So what subject sparked the biggest interest for you? Like when you were in school, what was like the one thing where you're like, man, I wish we studied more X?
I don't know. I was really fascinated with history for some reason, so I would go out of my way to try and find other history books, except that the ones that my parents gave me were obviously very skewed, so it didn't really help me expand my knowledge or point of views in that way.
You were trying, though. You were trying.
I feel like I had that drive.
And I'm guessing that this whole, like, idea of kind of making sure you only knew so much, I guess that also expanded to sex education as well.
Oh, yeah. Sex was very taboo, very taboo.
So. Did they teach you anything?
A little bit, but I know that there was definitely a lot of unanswered questions, if you know what I mean.
Yes. So kind of a like a Victorian, like we're going to tell you what you need to know when you need to know it and when we decide that you need to know it.
Yes, and I was probably very much older than should have been to find out about those things. And I think that's another one, you know, where there's dangers come along. You make this subject taboo. You're not aware of some of the dangers that are out there or how to protect yourself or be knowledgeable about your body. I think that's a big concern as well.
Yeah. Were they very negative about it, or was it just we don't want to talk about it?
I just think, like I said, it was taboo. It's like we don't talk about it. You know, it's not okay to openly talk about it.
And did you ever want to study anything that was like kind of forbidden?
Sex?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a big one, especially as you were getting older and you start getting all those hormones going and stuff. But like you were talking about history, and I'm assuming you guys went to the library a little bit.
Yeah.
So did you ever have like a history book that they were just like, no, you can't read that. And you're like, really? Okay. Quietly reading in the corner.
Maybe not necessarily on a school subject, but I really wanted to read Harry Potter, and that was forbidden. So
that's a good book series, too. I love that book series.
Just to jump in, I would not let my kids root for the New Jersey Devils hockey team. Because they were the Devils. And we took, like, there's so much music that I wouldn't let them listen to because it was like, oh my gosh, that's like the devil music. And
mm-hmm. See, I would go more for the factor of, like, you know, it's a bad hockey team. But I don't know anything about sports, so I don't know if they're actually a bad hockey team.
Yeah, we weren't allowed to listen to music as well. I'm very limited on what we were allowed to watch on TV. Even, you know, for a while, we weren't allowed to listen to country music because a lot of that, you know, if the artist wasn't a Christian or, you know, something like that.
And, you know, a lot of country music, it's just as bad as, like, any, like, 80s hair metal or any rap. Like, it really is, from, like, a fundamentalist point of view, or if you're trying to really, you know, shield your kids, there's a lot of sex drug. They just use different terms.
Yeah.
Actually, it's interesting because the older I get with some of the music, I'm looking at it going, I don't want to listen to you anymore because this just sounds really anti-female. Well, of course, it's a little different. So what kind of politics and news were you exposed to, like current events?
My parents were very conservative, so most of my views kind of came from that. And I have to say, I did hold a lot of those views. I think my parents were very racist. They were very sexist, very male-dominated, and those obviously are not my current views now, but that's just kind of the environment I grew up in. I think, looking back, I think it was quite hateful and very hate-driven. So
one thing is, I admit and fearfully that I'm a geek at heart, and you already said that you couldn't listen or read Harry Potter. Were you able to read any kind of science fiction or fantasy or anything like that?
It took me a while to convince my parents for me to be able to watch Lord of the Rings. I really wanted to watch Lord of the Rings.
It's a good movie, too.
So it took, I mean, I was a teenager and they were still thought, you know, the magic in it was, you know, bad. And it took me a long time to convince them to let me watch that. But I was able to watch Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. And actually what's funny about that is J.R.R. Tolkien was actually a Christian.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's like we were talking earlier about my college days. That was one of the things I was like, but you guys do realize that's a Christian tale. And they're like, no. So I'm guessing you never heard of Skynet?
No, can't say I have.
It's from the Terminator series, because I'm wondering if this is how they're going to get the robots to take over.
Okay, now I know what you're talking about now. Okay.
But another piece, we only have a couple minutes left, but another piece you spoke about was the isolation. Was that more due to the homeschooling or the remote location in Alaska?
Probably both, I would imagine, just because, you know, not really exposed to other, you know, kids your age. It's just very, and I think when you're, especially as a teenager, you need that social interaction. You need to have friends. And, you know, I felt like I didn't have that. And being in an environment, you know, with a family that's just so, you know, almost distraught, you know, that's not connected. I feel like I really did need friends at that time. And so it was very isolating.
All right. And then last quasi-silly question, did you guys have field trips?
You know, I remember maybe taking one or two, maybe to an aviation museum or something, but not really.
No. Oh, because that was one of the best parts of school is you get to not be at school.
Yeah, one of the big museums in Alaska was the Science Museum, and I don't think my parents would be taking me there.
No, probably not.
All right, when we come back, I want to go back to J.R.R. Tolkien, because I'm curious how you got your parents to let you read that.
Okay.
or watch the movie. That's really interesting to me. Please stay with us through the break, and we'll return to Atheist Talk with our guest Cameron Duncan. And thank you for tuning in to AM 950, KATNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950, KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're listening to Atheist Talk. I'm your host, Maddie Love, in studio with Hertzy Hertz, chatting with Cameron Duncan about her experience being homeschooled in a fundamentalist Christian household. Before we get back to the show, I want to remind everyone listening live that immediately following this program, you can listen to American Atheist Viewpoint, an official production from American Atheists. Today, Nick Fish will be discussing the repeal of the Johnson Amendment and why both religious and secular folks should be fighting against this repeal. If you missed it live, you can always catch American Atheist Viewpoint by subscribing to the podcast version in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or the podcast player of your choice. As for the here and now, if you'd like to get involved in the conversation with Hertzy and Cameron, then give us a call at 952-946-6205, email us at radio@mnatheist.org, or tweet us at Atheist Talk. All right, so I was going to throw it back to Hertzy and Cameron. I remember I wanted to ask Cameron a question, so I asked right before we went to break, so you had mentioned it took a while for you to convince your parents to let you watch Lord of the Rings. And I'm just curious, how was that process? Like, what arguments did you use?
Well, I realized at an early age my parents were pretty gullible, obviously. Not very, you know, questioning of things. So I remember there was a book or an article that was, you know, how the Lord of the Rings, you know, embraces Christianity, or, you know, something along those lines. And so I think my mom read that, and, you know, then she was convinced, you know, it was okay. And then they told me if I read the books, then I could watch the movie. So I pretended to read the books for a couple weeks, and then I was able to watch the movie.
I'm going to take slight issue. You pretended to read the books? They're fantastic.
I know, but I just don't think I was at that level.
Also, J.R.R. Tolkien likes to talk like 3 pages about a tree and how it glistens in the sun or something like that.
You say that in a negative way.
I'm just saying that sometimes it can get a little dry.
See, I got caught up on the pages and pages of a song.
I highly recommend. I actually, off topic, I'm sorry. I just finished the audiobooks of Lord of the Rings, and that was the first time I've ever actually knew what the songs were, because I just flipped past them. It'd be like, you know, when you read the Bible and begat, begat, begat.
Yes.
That's how I treated the songs.
See, I take a little issue with that because my dad actually read us The Hobbit when we were kids, and he actually sang the songs.
See? And the audiobook, they sing the songs, and it was like, oh, this isn't so bad.
Ah. Well, and that's one thing with the movies is they do skip the songs, which I thought was just really sad. Anyways, off topic. You were talking that your parents were gullible, or you found out how gullible your parents were. So what was that kind of the first crack in this bubble that they were trying to create?
I don't know. I just started wanting to, I wanted to learn. I wanted to be able to, you know, do other things. I really wanted to have friends. You know, it was just kind of, you know, you're watching a movie and you see what other opportunities people get to do. Yeah.
Because even in the strong Christian movies, there's, you know, groups of friends
yes,
and stuff.
Yes, and it even goes to the extent of, you know, getting to take part in those activities that you get to in school, you know, sports, prom. You know, you just miss out on those, you know, bigger life events. And it's just, I felt like I was missing that. I wanted to do something. And I know other people that went to our church were, you know, considering to going to college. And it was something I had never really considered. And I started looking into it and just decided that was something for me. Like, I wanted to get out. I wanted to go to school. And I think my cracks came after I left and was exposed to other things in school.
And going to college, knowing that you had a limited education at home, what was that process like trying to get in?
That was really difficult, basically, because almost all the colleges I applied to said you don't really meet the requirements. And Alaska, the University of Alaska is where I did my undergrad, and I kind of wrote them a letter and explained my situation. And they accepted me if I went and took all these prerequisite classes. So actually my first year of undergrad was spent taking, you know, the very like prerequisites that don't even count as college credit, but just learning basic math, basic English, and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I got in.
With that, were you able to get like your GED?
No.
Okay.
I have a high school diploma from, I think it's called Christian Light Education. Sorry.
Light on the education, it sounds like.
Thank you.
I just don't think it counts. So
no, I could totally see that. So they did actually accept you, and that was like a state of Alaska. That's a state school. How did your parents handle that idea of you going?
I don't know. My parents didn't really talk about anything. You know, it was just like, okay, I'm going, and you know, my mom dropped me off, and she was sad I was leaving, but I don't think they ever really supported my decision in that, or were very happy about it. So
sounds like they're kind of a quiet peoples.
Yeah, you know, just we didn't really talk. Our family was not very connected at all. So,
which is also interesting because you guys lived in such a. I mean, it's like in that kind of a situation, you guys are the only ones you get to talk to. I would assume that you would communicate.
I mean, I didn't really get along with any of my siblings because I was, you know, kind of the black sheep. Everyone else was just following everything my parents said, and I was sitting here questioning everything, you know, so I always felt out of place.
And when you got into the university, you say that's where a lot of those cracks started to happen. Can you, you know, talk about that for a minute?
Well, you know, just being exposed to different people and, you know, people of different races or, you know, different, you know, sexualities that, you know, we were told were so bad, you know, and, you know, evil people. And it's like, oh, well, these are good people. You know, why should I hate them? You know, and it's, you start to question some of those things, or you meet people who aren't Christian. You're like, oh, you're going to hell? That doesn't make any sense. You know, you're not a bad person. And then, of course, I had to take some science classes as part of our general requirements. And that definitely changed a lot of my views and kind of was like, wow, everything I've been told is a lie, basically. So
what was your favorite science class?
We just had to take a general science course. Mm-hmm. And I remember we went to the planetarium to watch this video. And that's when it was like explaining how life came to be, and that was my defining moment of, you know, really, it's like I understand, you know, that.
Oh, yeah, there's so much more to this universe than what I've been told, and oh my gosh, this is so huge. I love the planetarium, too, because you get to sit back and you're just like, whoa.
But it just made so much sense, and mm-hmm. It was all backed up by science, and, you know, it really changed the way I saw everything.
Awesome. So what made you move to Minnesota then, out of morbid curiosity?
Well, I was applying to different occupational therapy programs. They're kind of hard to get into, and I actually ended up getting accepted into the U of M. So
congratulations.
I came here.
Awesome. And then your journey to being an atheist, I'm guessing that this had some, that the homeschooling and such kind of helped and hindered that. Did that start when you were in, when you went to the university, or did that start maybe after?
I definitely was still identified as a Christian, you know, in the early parts of my education. But then later on, I read Richard Dawkins' book, and it's kind of when I started to identify as an atheist, because prior to that, I never even heard the term. So,
cool.
Oh, wow. I want to get back to that. We'll return with our guest, Cameron, right after the break. Please stay with us. I'm Maddie, sitting here enjoying how intelligent Cameron and Hertzie both are. And while you're listening, I'm sorry, and you are listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Maddie Love, in studio with Hertzie and Cameron, who are having a conversation about homeschooling in a fundamentalist household. Before we continue with our conversation, which will unfortunately be our final segment, I wanted to once again ask you, the listener, for a favor. Keeping secular voices on the public airwaves and the interwebs is important to us at Minnesota Atheists, and that's why we have Atheist Talk. Atheist Talk is currently produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina. Please consider visiting our sponsors. And if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you'd like to advertise on this program and help keep us on the air, please contact us at radio@mnatheists.org. Atheist Talk is put together by dedicated, talented, and slightly above average volunteers, but we couldn't do this without the generous donations of you, the listeners, who are the primary reason we stay on the air. It is listeners like you that keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast form, and I hope that you find each and every show we bring you informative, sometimes uplifting, or at the very least, a little bit entertaining. This week, we'd like to extend special thanks to Cindy, a monthly supporting donor. If you are able to help with the donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. We couldn't do the show without you, and I want to personally thank you for the support you've shown the show. Music for Atheist Talk is by composer and member Brent Michael David. As always, check out the Minnesota Atheist website at mnatheist.org, where you can browse articles, book reviews, and the calendar of upcoming events. We always have a ton of activities going on around the Twin Cities and the outlying suburbs. If you want to get involved, check out the website, sign up for Atheist Weekly Email. AWE will tell you when the Godless Gamers meet, help you find an agnostic AA group, find a book club, and let you know what speakers Minnesota Atheists have lined up. It's a great tool to stay connected with the community. If you enjoy this show and all that Minnesota Atheists has to offer, while you're on the website, consider becoming a member of Minnesota Atheists. Your support helps us better serve you. All right, mischief managed. Cameron and Hertzie, thank you for your patience. I was going to turn the microphone back over to Hertzie, but before the break, Cameron, you had mentioned...
Hold on one second. I have one argument with your intro. Slightly above slightly average volunteers. No, you guys are awesome. You guys are awesome volunteers.
Oh, I wasn't
volunteers.
Talking about me. I was talking about you. I'm way above average.
Oh, you are totally above average.
Yeah.
Okay, we're good.
Never mind.
Okay, good. We're good.
Most intelligent, beautiful person on the, you know, that's ever walked the earth.
Yeah, we can go with that. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. we had mentioned before the break that you said you had some problems integrating into college due to maybe the Christian light in education part of your fundamentalist upbringing. And or the homeschooling. And as a former fundamentalist, knowing what I tried to teach my kids, I understand that. But I was also like thinking back, we had a guest on a couple weeks ago, Abby Stein, who was raised in a fundamentalist Judaism household. She was Hasidic. And we have a guest coming up in a couple weeks who's also raised as an Orthodox. And I've talked to both of them enough to know that they both had a really, really hard time like getting in. I don't know where the question was going. I'm seeing correlations here. Like, it's not so much what religion you are. It's more just that, like, fundamentalist Judaism, you're taught in the schools, you're taught how to do the Torah over and over and over again and light on math. So I guess you said you had to do some prerequisite courses. Like, what was that like? Like, how much of a – did you feel out of place doing them?
Oh, absolutely. It was just really hard. You know, I didn't – You know, I kind of felt like I was stupid because I didn't know how to, you know, write a paper or do basic math. And it was hard. You know, I got down on myself a lot during those, you know, early years just because it was – I didn't even know, you know, different – like APA, you know, that's huge. Everyone knows that when you get into college. And I had no idea what anyone was talking about. And, it was challenging, but – I really wanted to learn, and I think that was a really big motivating factor for me. But it's just hard because you're just missing some of those basic skills, you know, like even like social interaction skills or just even work skills. If not, you know, I never really held a job or anything like that, so I didn't have any skills in that way. I couldn't really apply to get financial assistance or scholarships because my writing was so bad. You know, no one's going to give me a scholarship when my essays, you know, they don't sound good. And so I think that it all plays into a part of it.
So when you said you had applied and you'd sent a letter and trying to explain your position to the state of Alaska or – not the state, but the college.
The school, yeah.
I guess, what was the tone of that letter? Was it like, hey,
No.
Was it a plea? Did you let them know, like, look, I feel like I'm at a disadvantage. This is how I was raised. Like, did you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time ago, but it was something along those lines of just, hey, I really want to learn. I'm going to, you know, work really hard. I really want to do this. I may not have what I need now, you know, or I may be a little bit behind, but, you know, give me a chance. I really want to work hard and I want to learn. And it's just something along that line. But
yeah, it just seems like it would be cool. And maybe it exists if all of major state universities or whatever had a special, like, we're going to take at least this many students a year that are, they're not dumb. They just
But maybe like at a disadvantage.
Yeah. They're at a disadvantage because whether it's their homeschool or their local school, that their educational system, regardless of what that is, has failed them.
I think in Alaska, I did have a little bit of an advantage because you kind of see this stuff frequently in rural Alaska, you know, where people don't, you know, are having trouble integrating, you know, maybe it's outside of their culture. You have Alaska Natives who are coming from, you know, different areas of Alaska and coming to the university for the first time. And it's just helpful for them in integrating, you know, into college and learning some of those basic skills as well. And I think that's why they offer it there at the university. So I lucked out in the way that I just happened to grow up in a state that experiences stuff like this quite frequently.
And I saw a documentary in the History Channel about Alaska and how the people there live. I think it's called Alaska Bush People or something. I'm assuming that's how your family was, like, raised.
I get asked that a lot, but
I'm totally kidding.
But I do get asked that a lot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When you were at the university, did you have like that one moment of, oh my gosh, it's finally starting to click, like those social interactions and such?
No, I just think the whole experience was very scary just to be out on my own and, you know, not have very much support and, you know, trying to support myself on my own for the very first time. So it was just kind of a very scary experience, but...
Well, you did a great job. I mean, you've got a master's now. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And then, I had a question, and it's gone. Crap.
Except what question she was asking.
Oh, wait. Now I remember. Sorry. Did you ever get your prom?
So, there was a homeschool prom in the area that I went to.
Oh, did they?
But I don't want to count that, you guys.
No. Okay, so Maddie, obviously what we need to do is we need to have a prom for Minnesota Atheists for all the people who are homeschooled and didn't get a really good prom.
What about people like me that couldn't go to prom?
That counts too.
Okay, good.
I was going to say, we just need a prom for Minnesota Atheists. Board, let's start that. Oh, crap, that means I have to do it. All right. You had a question.
Well, I was just, you had also mentioned one of the things like that helped find is you're finding breaks in your previous in your religious upbringing was you read, you know, a book by Richard Dawkins. Was it just any specific book by Richard Dawkins?
I read the God Delusion. I didn't read that when I was in school. I read that when I actually moved to Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I started identifying with atheism. And that's actually when I got involved with Minnesota Atheists as well.
Nice.
So it was a good time to transition into identifying with that. But even before that, I just, you know, I just didn't really identify with anything at some point, you know, for a while. It was just, you know, whatever, you know, don't believe. But then after I read the book, I was like, actually, this is me. You know, I can identify with this.
For me, one of his the pivotal book for me for Dawkins was The Greatest Show on Earth.
Okay.
His book on evolution, because, you know, everything my pastor had told me, like, I'm reading the Dawkins book and I'm like, wait a minute. My pastor either lied or is ignorant. I don't know which, but either way, like, what I'm being told scientists say, and scientists in air quotes as the, you know, the evil group, what I'm being told they say and what they're actually saying, they're not the same thing.
That's exactly how I felt, you know, taking those science courses when I was doing my undergrad. It's just, you're like, wait a minute, you know, this is two conflicting pieces of information, but one is based on science, you know?
Well, yeah, in the science part, it was like, okay, well, Dawkins says, you know, he can point to this piece of evidence, and then you also have the genetics part and the astrology part, or not astrology, astronomy part and astrophysics, and then the geology. And it's like you've got all of these converging pieces of evidence, whereas before it was like, well, yeah, but see, this guy with a beard in a tent a long time ago, he was talking to God and he wrote it down. It was like, you know, I'm not saying it has to be wrong. I'm just saying that this one feels like there might be something more to it over here.
Well, even when I started reading The God Delusion, I don't even remember why I picked it up. But it, you know, it kind of made me mad at first. I was like, well, religion's not that bad, because I still had, you know, some of those. You know, just for me, when you grow up, it's like really integrated in you, you know.
But it's hard to break.
Yeah. And so, you know, I kept with it and I read it, and it was, you know, a really big life changer for me to read that book.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've read it. I don't want to say that was the book that I was an atheist when I read it, but I was much more of a newbie atheist. I was still in my angry at every religious person phase, which not every atheist goes through, but a lot of atheists go through. And so I remember reading it and thinking everything in it was like the gospel truth kind of thing. And looking back, it's like, well, there's some problematic issues here or there. And, you know, this argument is maybe isn't as strong, but it's a really good book.
Yeah, because even, you know, he'd make a statement, and like I said, it would make me mad. But then also, there was all this stuff to back it up, and it made sense, and, you know, it came away, you know, it took away, and I was like, wow, that actually, I understand
that. It made you think.
Yes, absolutely.
I guess is my favorite part, you know, the making you think, and being indoctrinated, and being somebody who indoctrinated other people. the one thing you didn't want to do is to have people think. I had an experience with one of my son, who was 4, maybe 5 at the time, he walked up to his aunt and made sure she knew that she was going to hell because she's pagan. And I was like so proud of him at that moment. Do you feel like if you had done that, something like that, feel like your parents would have been proud of you? Or
probably, I imagine so. They went through so many ups and downs too. Of, you know, they were, it could be really religious sometimes, and then. You know, if there's other certain parts about it, they'd relax a little bit and then get really strict again. But yeah, I could absolutely see them.
It sounds like you've come a really, really long way. So.
Yep.
I haven't read The God Delusion. I'm a bad atheist.
Oh, no, no, not at all. Like, I am, you know, Richard Dawkins, as somebody who's trans, Richard has sometimes said some things that I've taken to be a little problematic. But, I mean, he's a really smart guy.
He's very extreme.
Yeah,
but that's fine. He is very smart.
It's one of the things that I like about atheism, just in kind of in general sense of, we don't have to take anything they say by gospel. We can be like, no, I disagree with him on this stuff, and I agree with him on this stuff. It's not like I'm worshiping him. It's just we can have a difference of opinion.
Yeah, and you're not going to hell for it.
I know, that's the best part.
All right, well, thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk. I'm proud to be on the air with Minnesota Atheists, and I hope that you've enjoyed the show. The show depends on the generous support of our members, our sponsors, and donors. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at mnatheist.org. If you ever miss an episode of the show, we are available in podcast form. Have a good Sunday, and remember to stick around through the commercial break for American Atheist Viewpoint. Thanks.
Hello and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, July 16th, 2017. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. This week, the House Appropriations Committee voted through an appropriations bill that included a section, Section 116, that I've talked about here before and that we've been monitoring very closely. This was Section 116 of the Financial Services and General Government Subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee that appropriates money to different parts of the government and specifically to regulating financial services, the IRS, things like that. Section 116 of the bill forbids the IRS from engaging in any sort of enforcement of what's called the Johnson Amendment, or what has become known as the Johnson Amendment. That's not, you know, its actual name, but that's what, you know, people have sort of started calling it. It relates to the rules that all 501c3 organizations are supposed to follow. That applies to groups like American Atheists, groups like many of the other atheist organizations out there, and groups like churches. So this is something that we've been monitoring very closely, because one of the campaign promises of then candidate and now President Trump was to completely destroy the Johnson Amendment, in his words. This is a promise that was made sort of in acknowledgement or as a nod toward a select group of white evangelical pastors who have made this their issue over the last few years. So groups like Alliance Defending Freedom, groups like the Family Research Council and Focus on the Family, people who, you know, they're already engaged in politics, but they want to be able to take that next step and actually start endorsing candidates. And to be clear, they want churches to be able to do this. The thing that always bears repeating that I don't think people understand here is that talking about politics, talking about issues, talking about specific pieces of legislation, lobbying on specific pieces of legislation, having a viewpoint in politics, none of those things are prohibited by the Johnson Amendment. What is prohibited under the tax code as it currently is written is a church or other nonprofit that's a 501c3 that receives tax exempt status and whose donors get a tax benefit for donating to those groups. What's prohibited is them engaging in politicking, in partisan politicking, in supporting or opposing or spending money supporting or opposing candidates for public office. You're allowed to engage in politicking on a wide range of issues. You're allowed to lobby. We lobby. Churches lobby. Church organizations lobby. They're allowed to support, and this depends on the state, but federally, they're allowed to support, nonpartisan, ballot initiatives. So things that are being voted on at the state level that don't relate to being, you know, elected to office, but are, you know, potential amendments to the Constitution or popular, ballot initiatives or anything like that. Those are completely allowed and, you know, rightfully so, because we don't want to completely, you know, we value free speech. I think it's important that groups are able to talk about issues of import to them without wading fully into politics. And this is something that the other people who've been talking about protecting the Johnson Amendment, who are, you know, much more closely tied to the faith community. So advocates like Americans United for Separation of Church and State, who are not, you know, they're not an atheist group. They value secularism and they're led by a minister. They've been talking, as far as faith organizing is concerned, they've been talking with groups and talking with churches, and churches don't want to be put in the position of having to support, potentially to support candidates. They don't want to be put into the position of having to choose between talking about, you know, the things that they view as central to their mission and potentially having to compromise that because they're being forced to endorse, you know, a person for the city council and if they don't do that or they endorse the wrong person, potentially losing benefits or losing, contracts or city, city money that could be used for, you know, a soup kitchen or a food bank or whatever. They don't want to be forced into that position. And that's why when you ask, leaders of these organizations, leaders of churches even, they don't want this change. A majority of white evangelicals, I think it was 54% don't want this change. That's the rank and file. Almost 90% of leaders of evangelical churches don't want this change. 4,500 nonprofit organizations, both religious, non-religious, secular, religiously affiliated and having nothing to do with church-state separation came out opposing this change. We signed on to a letter that included those 4,500 people or those 4,500 groups. Other organizers have put together lists of hundreds and hundreds of faith leaders who don't want this change. Something like 99 different denominations opposing this change. The other side got together, I think it was 27 people, 27 representatives of groups like Focus on the Family and the Family Research Council and Alliance Defending Freedom, including state chapters of some of these groups. So they got 27, and it wasn't even all national groups. No one wants this. The vast majority of Americans don't want nonprofits and churches engaging in politics. And yet, the House of Representatives, subcommittee on financial services passed into the full appropriations committee a rider attached to an appropriations bill, meaning, where the government can spend its money. They attached a rider saying that none of the money appropriated can go to enforcing the law. And this is just a backdoor way of doing it. They don't want this to be debated as a full issue. They don't want this as a standalone thing because they know that it's so unpopular. And we have to thank, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the, congresswoman from Florida, who introduced an amendment to strip out Section 116, and said that this is one of those cases where, after the fact, we're going to look back, if this proposal passes, we're going to look back and say, wow, we really screwed this one up, didn't we? And she was talking to her Republican colleagues who supported it, because this is going to open the floodgates to so much secret, unaccountable money flowing through churches and religious groups into our elections. Churches don't have to file Form 990. They don't have to disclose anything about their finances. The changes here basically give them a free pass to accept money. They're already allowed to do that, but then to spend that money on politicking with zero accountability. There is no way for us to know who gave the money, what it was for, how much they're spending, what they're even doing with it. This is central to what it means to have a free and open electoral system is transparency. This is very much a fight to protect the character of our political system, the character of our nonprofit organizations, and even the character of our houses of worship, that if you're a religious person, you shouldn't want this. And again, most religious people have told us they don't want this. 79% of Americans don't want this. This is a fight, and it's something that we need to work on. It's something that we need everyone to stand up for. Please call your member, the House of Representatives. The switchboard number is 202-224-3121. Again, that's 202-224-3121. We need you to talk to your members. Tell them you oppose Section 116 of the Appropriations Bill. Visit our website. There's more information there at www.atheists.org. It's right on the front page. Click on the link to protect the Johnson Amendment. That's all the time I have for this week. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time.